Welcome back, podcast fans. I'm your host, Annette Hines, and this is Parenting Impossible, the Special Needs Survival Podcast. Here today to introduce you to Jamie Betts, who is another parent who has gone a little wild with an idea that they had about creating the things they wish existed. So excited for you to meet Jamie, who has gotten involved in something that she just never dreamed that she was going to do. But here she is doing something that benefits the rest of us. Yay, Jamie. So excited to meet her. I got introduced to her through a mutual friend, Marcy, who was also on the podcast. Thank you so much, Marcy. Marcy has, by the way, introduced me to so many amazing people, just like my friend Eric, who I mention a lot on this podcast, but oh my God, he is somebody who you definitely need to know. He is so crazy well connected in the disability community. And if you don't already know him, he is so worth knowing. Anyway, Jamie, if you listen to her story, Jamie is someone who, like many of us, has a child with disabilities and who never expected to be in the limelight, but was facing a problem with a growing child who was not, who was still incontinent and who was, finding it harder and harder to be able to change briefs or whatever terminology you use in a public bathroom. When this happens, it means that you become more and more restricted in where you can go. Well, little did she know, there was actually a movement on the rise of being able to make changing areas more universally accessible for those of us who need that. And although my daughter Elizabeth is not with us anymore, this was something that we faced for most of her 17 years of life, because once she hit, probably about 3 years old, she didn't fit on those changing tables anymore, not safely. And even when she was a little bit younger, she had, a G-tube and she had other equipment and a lot of things that made it unsafe for her to be up there. It was really difficult for us to change her. And it was just really challenging. And I'm going back over a quarter of a century, I don't want to say over 25 years, when I'm talking about working with these issues with Elizabeth. So it was really exciting. I had no idea that this was going on in my state. And there was just recently a hearing at our legislature to talk about a bill for universal changing spaces in public bathrooms. And it was very exciting. It had multiple layers of universal design in new buildings. And if you listen to the podcast episode ahead, you will hear all about it. And this is going on all over the country. So it's really exciting. If you go to the website, you will learn about which states are making progress, which states have already done this, which states, have not. And there's a changing table map in your state. And you can find out where you can go in your state to be able to change someone safely. And that is such a blessing. Nothing like this existed when my Elizabeth was coming up and along. And the internet has just changed everything for us, everything. Now, I want to take a minute before the podcast episode starts and just let you know that the podcast episodes may be a little erratic for the next couple of months. I have changed providers. I want to send a huge thank you out there to Integrity Marketing Solutions, who I've worked with for the better part of almost 2 years. Jennifer Goddard and Sarah Sonnenberg, who have just been an amazing, amazing pair of women and their team. I have enjoyed working with them so, so much. My needs have changed a little bit. I've swerved a bit and have now gone to this community membership model that we are doing, which I've been talking about incessantly. So I know that you know about this because I have relentlessly been telling you about it. So my marketing needs have changed and we are not going to be working together any longer. So they will not be managing my podcast episodes, but I just could not be more grateful and could not say enough wonderful things about the support and the professionalism and just the wonderful experience that I have had with them through these last almost 2 years that we've been working together. And I hope that we'll be able to work together again sometime in the near future. So thank you, ladies, and thank you to everybody on their team. If you do have marketing needs and you are a law firm, because they work exclusively with law firms, and that's sort of where our paths kind of diverged at this point, I think you should absolutely check them out. And I'd be happy to give you a referral in a wonderful review. So on that note, I will be managing with my small team here, getting the podcast out myself. And we will be doing our podcast alongside of the live stream events that we are doing in our community membership on Mighty Networks in our circle of care. So they will be not necessarily routine and regular like the podcast episodes that we have been doing every Wednesday-ish. So you may not see a regular episode every single week coming out. You may see episodes come out every other week or every 10 days or so, and they'll come out and they'll be more like the webinars or the live events that have come out previously. However, I expect that these episodes that come out are going to be pretty darn fantastic because they're mostly going to be the guests that I have on the live events. I may even end up being able to get a lot more content out. So we will see how this goes, and I'm really excited about it. Change is good, people. Change is good. So embrace the change and create those things that you wish existed. I am very excited about our new membership, and it's all free. Content is always free. Come on over, join us, and please let me know if there's any content that you haven't seen yet that you would really like. If you have a guest that you would like to see, if you would like to be a guest. We will be loading in the circle information about how to be a guest on our show or how to be a guest in the circle. So I look forward to seeing you all in the circle, talking to you all in the circle, and thank you so much for joining us. Here we go. Here today with an amazing advocate, Jamie Betts, who has such a great story. You know, folks, that I love my advocates on this podcast. We are going to talk about Changing Spaces, the Massachusetts chapter, who just had a great hearing in Massachusetts. And Jamie's going to tell us all about it. But I want to really start at the beginning. Jamie, can you tell me a little bit about your family and why you decided to lead this Changing Spaces advocacy campaign in Massachusetts?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, everybody. Have you been searching for a law firm that understands the unique challenges of your family? We can help. My name is Annette Hines, and I'm a mom and an attorney. And I'm also an advocate. And I started Special Needs Law Group because when my family was young,
I struggled to find all the services and support that my family needed. We can help here at Special Needs Law Group with special needs trusts, guardianships, and maybe you aren't even sure what you need yet, and we can help with that too. Book a free call today. You can either use our link in the show notes, or you can go to www.specialneeds-law.com. See you soon.
So my daughter, Sophia, is almost five, and she has Sotos syndrome. So she has an overgrowth syndrome that is coupled with development delays. So that means that she is only five, but has outgrown baby changing tables a couple of years ago, and is not potty trained now, and not sure when that will happen. So we ran into this problem that where do you change people who don't any longer fit on a baby changing table? We are part of a huge community of people with this need, and it just wasn't out there. You know, before my daughter, I didn't have much exposure at all to disability. I always assumed that, you know, ADA took care of things that needed to be taken care of, and people had accessibility, at least reasonably, in, you know, 2020, and have obviously found that to not be the case now that I'm in this world. But, you know, I was seeing a lot of things happening, changes happening specifically with bathrooms for different kinds of marginalized or minority groups, where what was available in the public space wasn't meeting people's needs. But I wasn't hearing our community really loudly, at least in Massachusetts. So, you know, I started looking online, and another advocate who I follow for autism had been posting about changing spaces. And I knew the first time I used an adult changing table that I needed to try to get these in place in Massachusetts. And so, or just in general, you know, what I found is that the national organization Changing Spaces is organized by state. So I was like, I need to get involved somehow. It happened that it's by state. Massachusetts did not have any leadership yet. So that was when I decided to start our chapter here and organize this coalition that we've really arranged. Lucky things happened. First, as an advocate in Western Massachusetts, who just, it's by talking to her, she's like, I just fired off an angry email to like my rep one day, and it turned into this bill that he introduced before I even started Changing Spaces Massachusetts. And then it happened that as I was talking to different advocacy groups, talking with the ARC of Massachusetts, someone was like, you know, there's a bill, right? And I was like, I did not know there was a bill. So it got lucky that there was a bill that I could kind of get behind and use that as a way to get into lots of rooms, right? And even though what the bill does and doesn't do, and we can talk about that later, like it's a very small first step, but it started the conversation, right? So many people that even disability advocates that you talk to, they're like, oh, I didn't know that there was a universal changing table, or I didn't know. They just, which is kind of mind blowing to me that people who need it don't even know about it. That was surprising.
Well, let's talk about the scope of the problem. You know, because as somebody who has experienced this with my own daughter for 17 years, I can tell you it's a big problem when you have it. Yeah. She was a wheelchair user, and very quickly after the first couple of years, she didn't fit on those baby changing tables. She couldn't stand up on her own. She couldn't toilet. We couldn't hold her on the potty. And, you know, changing really horrible poopy diapers, you know, just not to get gross, but there's no place to do that safely and cleanly in an adult public restroom. It is very, very difficult as a parent, as a caregiver, to do that.
Well, and also I think people, it's still hard for people to extrapolate like from their experience of changing a baby with like a teeny tiny baby poop, right?
Yeah.
To the experience that you have with someone who maybe has gastro issues.
That's right.
Or has skin like infections regularly, like all these issues that come with the diagnosis of why they're still in a diaper make it so much worse. So it's still like, even if they're like, oh yeah, I wouldn't want to change a baby on the floor, it's so much more than that. And even so we testified yesterday and we tried to hit on a lot of things, and you know, not only is it the fact that we're on the floor and it's the act itself is undignified, it strips the person being taken care of any dignity, humanity, privacy. But it's all of the logistics, taking a child or person away from their desired activity, singling them out. And you know, for my daughter, it sometimes feels like half the time we're out, it's like going back, figuring out where to go, taking a while to actually do it because you're trying to minimize exposure.
Yeah.
And then like Sophia has autism, and taking her away from a desired activity. So she's already upset before you have to lay her on a floor, which sensory issues, hello, like all of it is, and it's so solvable, like a universal change. These tables are lovely.
Right.
And it's just the difference in experience. The first time, just the first time my family experienced it, we were at the airport, Charlotte Airport. Again, so this was before, I'm going to call it summer of 29. No, that doesn't make sense. Summer of 2021. What year is it? What year is it? 23. The last summer. Summer 2022. And I had never seen one before. And we were in a companion care restroom at Charlotte Airport. And for the first time, I wasn't forced to lay Sophia on a filthy floor to care for her. You didn't have to worry about strangers looking at her under the stall doors. And you're not wrestling on the floor yourself. You know, here in our airport in Boston, there are none. So, and the travel experience is so, anyways, that, you know, you're about to get on an airplane, or you've just gotten off an airplane where you were not able to change. And just making that a little bit more convenient makes such a difference,
Oh yeah. Good. Traveling on an airplane as a wheelchair user is so difficult, if not impossible. And you do sit for hours and hours and hours, very often in uncomfortable incontinence. And yeah, you need to rush to the bathroom as soon as you're off the airplane and get that change going. And as you mentioned, there's often a lot of issues. Like for my daughter, there was a lot of diarrhea, loose stools. There was a lot of skin breakdown. And it was hard to keep her clothes clean as we were trying to change her on that bathroom floor and everything else. And we would often then find our way out to the van, and I would be trying to change her on the floor of the van and keep things private. And it was cold, or it was hot, or, you know, it was just terrible. My back would be killing me, and trying to lift her up back into her wheelchair. And once she got too big, I couldn't do it anymore. And then came the times when we would say, okay, well, we're not going out anymore. So now we can't.
That's devastating.
And now we can't, you know, go to that party. And now we can't, you know, go out to that event. And, you know, the social isolation begins. And you withdraw further and further and further from society because you can't do these things anymore. And I know this is something that you talked about and that, you know, is a big part of what you're trying to combat here.
Yep. Yeah, it's the decisions to stay home or to break your family up. You know, adults, when, you know, they're old enough and making decisions by them for themselves, you know, I think a parent, like as a parent, I would never not give my child food or drink. But perhaps if you're an adult and you make that decision for yourself, that is not a decision someone should ever have to make. I'm going to be out tomorrow for a long time, or I'm going to be traveling and I don't want to have an uncomfortable experience. So I'm just not going to eat or drink today so that I don't have to go to the bathroom tomorrow. Right. And that's horrifying.
Right. So on the positive side, though, tell us a little bit more about what these changing tables, these adult tables are like that are the solution.
So I can pull up the exact specifications that we encourage, but large enough to fit an adult, holding up to 350 to 400 pounds, powered height adjustable. So you push a button, they go down. The person can help you if they're old enough, or you can more easily, you know, navigate them at the height that you need onto the table. And then you can raise the table up. So you're not, you know, bending over the way that we do. They have a safety bar and a seatbelt or a strap. So if you have someone with epilepsy and there's a concern of a seizure, they're not, or just they're upset and kind of thrashing around. There's safety there. Those are the specs. And then, you know, the space around the room, the space around the table is large enough to navigate the wheelchair and a companion. Okay. So there are Changing Spaces advocates, leaders actually were part of a task group that was established by the International Code Council a couple of years ago, and they developed code changes and standardized specifications. So they've all been well thought out with input from our advocates, and those changes are approved to be included in the 2024 International Building Code. At the federal level, the United States has said, yes, these are our recommendations as well, but every state then needs to go through and accept them. So that is something that our, you know, state leaders are going around, are navigating. Okay, is it easier in my state to get legislation passed, or is it easier to do the building code? Because they can't, it's one, you don't need both. If you get the specs from the building code passed in your state, then that negates the need for legislation of new buildings. But back to the tables. It's the ease of use. They're big, they're lovely, plenty of room for the person and your stuff, really all the things you need to do a change. And then if you also think about the other people who it would help, say you're in a wheelchair and you have a typically developing child. Well, now you have a height adjustable table. So that allows you to care for your child as well. So it helps, on both sides, which isn't something that you would immediately think about. But when you think of the coalition of people who we can get together to push for this, it's, you know, obviously children, parents of bigger young children or young adults, but also anyone who becomes disabled at any time, disabled veterans, the elderly with incontinence. I mean, it's such a larger group of people than people immediately think. And the reason I think, you know, people can have their own story, but for me, to start talking about this and start talking about that this was a problem for Sophia felt like an invasion of Sophia's privacy. And it feels uncomfortable to talk about going to the bathroom. And especially for able-bodied, like they don't want anything to do. No one wants to talk about it. No one wants to think about anyone over the age of two needing a diaper. Like it's just not proper. Like we don't want to talk about it. We don't want to think about it. And for that reason, people have just like been shamed and I think into being quiet about it. And then at the same time, parents, again, as we said in the, when we spoke earlier, you know, the ones who need to do the advocating then are already drowning. So it's just, it's a big lift. And it's, you know, you get enough people who look at you like you're crazy or get shot down. And it's just like, all right, well, then we'll just keep doing it. And you get your routine. You're like, okay, well, we've got our blanket in the car. We know what we have to do to make this work. And like, but we can do better.
we can always do better. And thank goodness for people like you. And you've teamed up with the ARC of Massachusetts, right? Mm-hmm. And that's great.
Right.
And how did your hearing go yesterday?
The hearing was good. It was a long day. We were the 25th bill out of, or I don't know how many were after us, because then we left because it was 4.5 hours later. So, you know, we lost some people in the beginning of the day. The room was full. And by the time we went, it was not full. But I think at the same time, you know, the leadership of the, it was the Joint Committee for Children and Families and People with Disabilities, I think they did really appreciate that we stayed all day. And we were sure we had, you know, virtually or there, we had 10 people testifying. And I think we had some powerful testimony. I'll send the video if anyone wanted to check that out, is available. And yeah, so now we go to working again, because this bill was introduced before I was involved and before there was input from like the national organization, their wording is a little vague. So just strengthening the language of the bill so that it's makes the impact, the desired impact. So it's in line with the specifications that are coming into the International Building Code. And then I feel like I had a day to breathe, but I'm like, okay, well, now everyone's talking about it. So I have to stay in front of them because the bill really doesn't do that much. Like, it's just new builds and like substantial reconstruction and starting in 2026. So it doesn't move the needle at all for at least a year and a half if it passes this time. And but it makes architects aware, makes developers aware. And awareness is such a huge part of this problem. Even well, we thought we were compliant. There, or they think they're accessible. And notice another problem, funny, that I found run like as talking to like male older specifically male legislators, they didn't even change diapers. So this is totally like they didn't even change baby diapers.
Yeah, so foreign concept.
Like, oh. Yeah,
but so, and you know, and then another trailing issue after all of this is making sure that the handicap accessible bathroom is available to mm-hmm. our people when we need it, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's such a long-standing problem too, is people who really just do not understand that they have to leave that bathroom open and available to us when we need it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing. I do, I still see people going at like friends of mine going in when we're at something and I'm like, with their kid, you know, I'm like, so the small steps of, you know,
yeah,
not always being the person like, but.
So I think that you are spot on though, bringing the attention to the topic, to the issue, to the problem, because many, many, many of my friends never even thought about how I change Elizabeth when we go out.
Yep.
You know, even when we've been at their houses, how are you going to get her into our house? Doesn't even occur to them. Like, they invite us over and they're like, we get there and they're like, wait, there's stairs here. Like, people who don't encounter these physical challenges and physical blocks to their existence never think about it. They don't see it and they never think about it. And so when you are able to just show them, so you go there and get her into the house, carry her in, carry the wheelchair in, and then you're in there and you're there for 2 hours. And all of a sudden people are like, what do I smell? Okay. So okay, it's not great. Nobody wants to talk about poop. I get it. You know, it's not a great conversation. But then, you know, okay, let's carry her up to the bathroom. So you carry her up to the bathroom. Where are you going to change her? So now you're changing her on somebody's bed. And it gets people thinking about a little bit about what your life is like. You know, this is what I do every day, like 6 times a day.
Yep.
And it does start to dawn on people after a while how hard your life is and her life.
Yep.
Because this is, you know, she has to have intimate care by other people constantly.
Well, and even people who, there's so many people who also don't need the care, right? Who are kind of on that fringe, and they could be independent and self-sufficient if we just gave them like what they need. And this is something that would really just, there was a video from a woman at the Minnesota State Fair. We can talk about the momentum changing tables momentum changing stations. They're, you know, they're really nice porta potties that look kind of like an RV.
Yeah.
So it's that, but it is, has a ramp with a lift. They have a hoist, they have a changing table, and it's a beautiful mobile changing station, and it's fully accessible. And so the Minnesota State Fair had them, and they've been popping up around and trying to figure out who to talk to get some. I feel like the city of Boston should just have one and roll it out at every marathon and any outdoor festival. But there's a video of a woman at the Minnesota State Fair, and she was like, I can do everything myself, but if I go into a normal bathroom and I just like get stuck or something happens, and then I need to ask for help. And it was so amazing to be able to come here and have a day where I had full independence and I didn't need to ask anyone to help me in the bathroom. And like, it's just something that most people, I certainly never thought of. And again, I don't even fault people for not thinking, I never thought of it, but that's why I'm out there saying it, because had I realized this, like, absolutely would have been appalled, but I didn't know. So fine, I don't fault anyone. But once you know, like, how you go back to not knowing and not trying to change this, like, imagine when someone asks me about the need, it's like, well, when you go to a public restroom, do you expect there to be doors on the stalls? Yes, I expect that. I expect there to be a clean, even like, it's just, and again, coming from a place of privilege where this was just something that never been an issue. If I leave my house, if I'm away from my house for 2 hours and I have to go to the bathroom, there's no question I'm going to find a bathroom quickly. Right. Like, it's not a question. And everyone should have that same freedom to move around comfortably and safely, you know, even just staying in a soiled diaper for too long, risk of infection. Yes. And also then you're like, first, I'm like, then she's the stinky kid. And then that opens up all other types of things.
It's so bad. So two sides of the conversation, two really important sides of the conversation, and so important that you brought that up. So what's next? Like, what's the next step, Jamie?
So my next step is Tennessee. So very immediate next step is working with the committee that heard this bill to get the language the way we want it and hopefully get that bill passed. There's a chance we can work and kind of create like a coalition with another bill where they were trying to get just baby changing tables and companion care restrooms, just to be sure like the dads have a place to change. And we're like, okay, we'll scrap that and do ours instead. You don't need a baby change. Universal, everyone can use. Babies can use them too. So there's that. Tennessee has an amazing program. They've worked with their department on developmental disabilities. And they had $1 million line item put into the budget. And then the DDS is managing a grant program where businesses can apply for, it was a $5,000 grant at first, and they might be trying to increase it to 10,000 or more now, but where businesses can apply for a grant to defray the cost of putting in a table. And that gets tables in existing buildings now. So that I think is more of an immediate, not I think, it is more of an immediate impact. And I think they put in about 60 tables through that program. Yeah, in Tennessee. Or I'm not going to say they're installed, but I think grants have been given out for 60 tables, which is amazing. And that's huge. So I think something like that is probably the way to go. Our advocates in Ohio have started a nonprofit where they are fundraising and doing that themselves. So private cool. fundraising and giving out grants. I think these momentum, especially in Massachusetts, where there are a lot of old buildings and historic buildings. And so the construction actually is a problem to get the space that you need for these tables. So something like these momentum mobile stations, I'm going to pull it up so you can see it quickly. Momentum Refresh, they're called. And their logo is, it's time for a change. Is that correct? So it's this, I don't know if you can see.
Yeah.
But there's a lift, and then inside there's a table and there's a ton of room, and they just park it and they're great. And I think that's another, you know, and they exist. They're in production. So that's another, you know, next step.
And we have so many parks and open space and all of that. It would be great, although not so great in the winter, but yeah, still, that's awesome. So
yeah, it's not a 100% solution, but you know, places like where we're asking for these, and you know, if you think about, just think about where it's a pain point, right? Like obviously a park's a whole nother thing about park accessibility. But like a library, right? A library is a place where people can go. It's free. And you think of that as somewhere that is easily accessible. And that would be that is such a great example of where they would make a difference. And then, but then there are like gross places like a pool. I got one. Oh, I forgot. I got one put in my town pool. This was great. My town was redoing our pool. I was past the construction phase when I got involved. And so I was lucky that they had a space that fit it. But, you know, I went to them and was like, look, I know I'm late, but you have a chance to make this like a really accessible pool. And it's a huge problem for us. I went to our recreation committee and then kind of launched like letter writing campaign with, you know, friends of Sophia, friends of ours from the schools, teachers, and then got, you know, kind of spread out. And I think he got, I don't know, 100 letters like in 2 days or something. And they ended up doing it. And it's wonderful. And every time we go in to use the table, Sophia says, "Hi, table."
That's adorable.
Yeah. And you know, my little one, so Sophia's almost 5, Chloe's 3, and Chloe is, she knows. I mean, we'll go somewhere, and we were at the zoo recently, and I made, I had the wagon, so I ended up using the wagon as like a makeshift, which was so unideal. But even their baby changing table was like this. It was like, but Chloe's like, where are we gonna change Sophia? I'm like, I don't know, girl. Like, I guess we're just gonna figure it out. But that, and that, sorry, I'm jumping around a lot. I'm just like thinking of things I want to say. And this was something, in one of the testimonies yesterday that was really, I think, would hit for a lot of people, just that, you know, for our typical kids, it's don't touch anything, get in and out as fast as you can. Don't look under the stall doors, privacy, privacy, privacy. And then the best we're willing to offer though, our kids, is the bathroom floor. And that signals to young kids at a real early age of they're different. They don't have, you know, that's really gross, but we put them down there. They're not, they can go down there.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Yeah. Why is it not okay for me to sit down here, but you're going to put her down there? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think you had mentioned something, or maybe I read it somewhere, that there's a map where you can find the accessible changing tables. Is that on the website?
It is. So if you go to changingspacescampaign.com, there is a ton of information. So
awesome.
So first of all, your state leaders are here to help you advocate locally, or to help organize a coalition in your state. But the self-advocacy, or like local advocacy, like I did in Weston, is really important too. And that can be, those can be easier wins, and they make your community immediately more accessible and livable for you. So if you go there and you go to resources, there's an advocacy toolkit, and we talk about, you know, what you're asking for. There's information about different tables. Yeah. It's really, it's, there's a lot of powerful stuff. There's you know, flyers and just things to make your job of advocating a lot easier. And then I don't know what's happening in my house. Like, all hell's
broken. Jamie, that's always, every podcast is like that. Just relax, please.
Just pretend I hear nothing. I don't hear the screaming.
Every podcast we have kids yelling, we have dogs barking, we've got people, delivery people ringing the doorbells. No worries, girl. It's totally fine. So just do not stress. Okay.
All right.
So listen, this is
the best. We have that advocacy toolkit, and then also the map. So the map is also, you can get to it a couple places on there. And so the map is important. One, it helps you to plan if you're going somewhere new and you want to see, or you want to plan a trip and you want to see where you can stop along the way. Rest stops, another place that,
yes,
such a no-brainer. Just like, oh, we can't even drive. We can't fly because that's not accessible. Maybe that's, we can drive. Like, oh, nope, not that either.
I'm telling you, I have taken my girls on these trips to see their grandparents from Massachusetts to Virginia Beach and North Carolina, where their grandparents were. They're both passed now, but what a miserable 10 to 12 hour drive that always was. Oh my God. Because trying to find a place to change Elizabeth, and I'm telling you, I would end up laying her down in the back of the wheelchair van and killing my back. I have like lasting back injuries forever because of that, you know, because there was never any place to change her. And I was not going to do it on the bathroom floor in the public restroom. So that's what we would do. And then true story. And I've told this story before on this podcast, but it's been a while, so some of you have heard it. You know, my younger one, Caroline, at a very young age would watch me changing Elizabeth, and would say to me one day when she was about 5 and Elizabeth was like maybe 9, she said to me, "Mommy, when am I going to have to change Elizabeth?" Like, this was like something she was already worrying about.
Yeah.
So this is like a big deal, people, you know, this is not like an easy breezy thing in our lives. This is a big, big hairy deal.
Well, and so I had a nanny quit on me. I wouldn't be surprised if this is part of the reason. Like, it's a big, I mean, it's the first thing, even with all of Sophia's health issues, you know, it's all under control. We give her medication in the morning, at night. Like, it's not even something the nanny's going to have to work about. But like, we lead with, we have a 5-year-old in diapers and you are going to have to change her and there's nowhere for you to do it. So you, are you okay with that? It's the first question we ask. And we had found a nanny who was great, but she was older. And I was like, I'm worried about your body being okay. And I'm worried about her dropping Sophia, or, you know, and it creates, you know, we all know there's a childcare crisis right now. Like, it's harder, even harder for me to find childcare because of this. And yeah, what you said about your daughter knowing at the age of 5, like, when will, I guess I'm going to have to do this. And I don't know how long Sophia will be in diapers. I hope she's potty trained at some point for her safety and, you know, ease and of well-being. Life, of yes, course, like we absolutely all want people to have independence, but like, she could be potty trained tomorrow and I would not stop what I'm doing. Like, it's just, I've seen the difference that it makes, mm-hmm, and I've seen the pain it causes and families having to split up and not like get divorced, but, you know, like plan their days differently, or
right.
And, you know, so many of the wonderful experiences we have, yeah, there's that like tinge of that, but there was that difficult part, right? There was that part where we had to go find, you know, I took Sophia to the Ice Capades, do they call it that? Disney on Ice. And I found a locker room eventually, but you're like wandering around trying to find somewhere. So she's missing the show and you're like, well, and I just talked to people and they're like, so much of the time, then it's like, well, why did I buy these tickets? And you know, for me, I am fortunate we can bring a nanny a lot, or I'm married, so it's me and my husband. But think about single moms or people who can't have a nanny with them all the time. And just the impact on them is so much harder. And, you know, poverty and disability is a 1-2 punch. And this, I know that every time I take Sophia out, those experiences, not be like, oh, we only see Sophia at school. I know that she is out there and every kid should have that, like any opportunity that we can to get kids out there. And then also, you know, as they get older, avoid falling into that, the spiral of isolation.
That's true, Jamie. It is. All right. Well, this has been so uplifting. I love it. I love a good advocacy story. Let me tell you, the day my daughter Elizabeth was born, an advocate was born right along with her.
Yep.
So 100%. I'm so excited for all of the progress that you all are making. What a difference it would have made in my life, let me tell you, and Elizabeth's life. I'm glad it's not too late. You know, it's never too late. I'm glad that progress is being made now. So what? It's 2026, you know, it's better than not.
Anything is better. Yep.
And, so I'm going to have all of your contact information in the show notes so people can go to the website, can look up the advocacy kit so that they can make some small and big changes in their own communities. And also look at that changing table map and see what's available in their own area and what's not available in their area, so they know what they have to fight for.
Yeah. One more thing on the map. Sorry, let me add. If you know a table that's not on the map, please submit it, because that, like, as robust as we can make this resource for people.
Oh, yeah, sure.
That's what we're going for.
Definitely. And then, you know, just get connected, you know, connect back in and let them know what's going on in your state. If you're making progress and they don't know about it, then connect with them and let them know. And maybe if your state doesn't have an advocate, doesn't have a chapter leader, and you would like to be that person, they would love to hear from you. So
yeah, we have a wonderful group of people and we all really support each other. And it's a It's a support system too, I think, for a lot of us. It's great.
Well, Jamie, I can't thank you enough. I know that you are very busy, especially without an extra caregiver right now. It's really amazing that you took the time to be with us today and let us know what's going on. And we are very grateful. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
All right. Have a good night.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. I just wanted to take a second to say how much I appreciate you taking the time to listen to these podcasts. I'm having a blast doing them, and I hope that you're finding the content to be what you were really hoping. If you are, please take a second to leave a rating and a review. It's so helpful in getting this content out to people who really need to hear it. Thank you so much.